Nachman and Rav Paragin on the topic of Haseh Lecha Rav. It's a little ironic of me speaking and introducing this in front of my Rav. Many of you know that I certainly consider Rabbi Blachman one of my Rabbeim of Hakim, it's a special privilege for me to be able to speak about this topic in front of my Rebbe and to have the opportunity to give public hakaras hatov. That's what we're talking about Haseh Lecha Rav, about somebody who has had such a profound influence on my thinking and my avodas Hashem throughout my life. Rav Paragin as well, someone who I've come to know rather well over the years, back from our years learning together in yeshiva. Rav Paragin, one of the older bachrim in yeshiva that everybody used to look up to in so many ways back in yeshiva, and who has throughout the years since then amassed hundreds, if not probably close to 1,000 of Talmidim throughout the year and serving as a Rav. But tonight the truth is we're not actually asking for Rav Blachman or Rav Targin to speak as Rabbeim as much as we are asking them to speak about some of their experience, at least at the beginning, some of their experiences with their Rabbeim. And then afterwards to speak a little bit about some of the things that come up about this topic of having a Rebbe and how one interacts with one's Rebbe. But before we begin, Rabbi Benovich just asked me to give some words of introduction to the topic in general. And this is a topic that's very, very close to my heart, that I speak about all the time. As a matter of fact, at every single DRS graduation, I happen to be the principal of a high school called DRS, some of you might have heard of it. And at every single graduation, there is one common theme that I say at every graduation, and that is about this. About Haseh Lecha Rav, about as we send the students out into the wild blue yonder, to wherever direction they might go, the importance of Talmidim, of especially youngsters in their formative stages of growth, how important it is for them to connect themselves to Talmidei Chachamim, to connect themselves to a Rebbe, to various Rabbeim, to Talmidei Chachamim, and what a difference that can make in a person's life. I mean, why is this so important? Why is this the thing that I stress at graduation ever? Why is it so important? So, on the pasuk Toshes Choshech Vayhi Laila, the Gemara comments, Zeh Ha'olam Hazeh Shedoma L'Laila. This world, especially for the religious Jew, but for everybody, the Mesilas Yesharim develops this idea a lot about what darkness does to a person. What does it mean that Olam Hazeh is Doma Lalaila? But there's a lot of darkness. There's a lot of confusion. There are many challenges. There are Yetzer Haras that work overtime. One of my favorite comments of the Rambam that I speak about literally hundreds of times is where the Rambam in Hilchos Deos states in Perek Vav, Derech Priyaso Shel Adam Lios Nimshach B'deyosav B'bumasav Achareya B'chaverav Noi Kemenan Anshi Medina. So Hashem created us as social animals. Hashem created us as people who are so influenced by friends, by chevra. That's the way He created us. And then the very next line, the Rambam says, Lufikach, Sarech Adam Lishaber Litzadikim, Velishav Eitzel Achachamim Tamim Kideshi Yomov Mimaseim. The Rambam says how important it is for a person to surround himself with Talmidei Chachamim, to hang out with them, to, as the Mishnah so beautifully speaks about in Pirkei Avos, Yehi Beischa Beis Vad L'Chachamim Hevi Misabik Ba'afar Agleim Hevi Shosu Batzamas Tereim. Such powerful imagery that the Mishnah commands us to be Misabik Ba'afar Agleim, to literally get dusty with the dust of their shoes, of Talmidei Chacham of Tzadikim. Such a powerful imagery, which the Mepharshim talk about what exactly it means. Pashup Shat, just to walk after them. When you walk, you create a lot of dust. And when you walk after them, if the places where the Talmidei Chacham and Tzaddikim go, you go as well. So hopefully some of that dust will cling on to you. On the pasuk Uludav Kabo, Chazal learn out, Hadbeik B'Talmidei Chachamim. And what What does a Rebbe provide for a person? The Rebbe provides for a person many, many things. The Maharal comments, you know, in the first parak of Pirkei Avos, Asei Lecha Rav, interestingly, in the first parak of Pirkei Avos, Asei Lecha Rav shows up twice. Is Asei Lecha Rav in one early Mishnah, and Asei Lecha Rav in a later Mishnah? The Maharal explains that actually a Rebbe provides for a person two different things. Of course, a Rebbe provides for a person Torah content. A lot of times, Torah is also difficult. Torah is very, very difficult to understand. And oftentimes, a person needs a Rebbe to explain the Torah to him, to set his sights high in Torah, to show him what he's capable of accomplishing, to show him what somebody is capable of achieving in Torah. But the second Asei Lecha Rav, the Maharal says, is a different kind of Asei Lecha Rav, not so much on the content of Torah, not just so much on the halachos or to know what the Torah states, but to also understand Hashkafas HaTorah, to understand advice. And I, speaking certainly in front of my Rebbe and so many of my other Rebbeim, many of you know Mori Rabbi or Mordechai Willig, I can tell you in my lifetime the amount of Torah advice and the amount of Torah wisdom, not so much the chapter and verse of what it says on the page, but just the Hashkafas HaChayim of the Torah. To be able to have a Rebbe, someone to speak about the challenges of life. So the Gemara says that's the second Asei Lecha Rav. Just two other brief thoughts. The Gemara sometimes talks about some of the Tanaim would be Tala V'Ilanei Rav Reve. That, and I remember distinctly, I remember the first time when I was young and somebody asked me a question. A younger guy, I was in college, I was in yeshiva in YU. One of the younger guys came over to me and asked me a question, like a really serious question in my life. And I said, what do you ask me a question for? Rabbi Willig is right down the hall. Go ask Rabbi Willig. So he says, no, I want to ask you. He says, that's ridiculous. You could ask me. I'll go down the hall. I'll ask Rabbi Willig. So sure enough, he asked me a question. So I walked down the hall, down to the third floor. I asked Rabbi Willig. Rabbi Willig turned to me and said, no, you should answer the question. I said, Rebbe, but I don't know anything. You should answer the question. I remember that feeling of chizuk, of strength, that a Rebbe gives you when a Rebbe can give a person, when you speak to somebody and you know you're getting the sum total of the Rebbe's learning and the Rebbe's wisdom and the Rebbe's all his Torah, when you hear that from a Rebbe, that gives a tremendous sense of chizuk. And just, again, we could speak about this for so long, I want to really leave most of it for our panels tonight, but certainly the other thing that stuck in my head was when Yosef HaTzadik was about to sin, because he was overcome by his Yetzirah, so Chazal say, he saw Demus Diokno Shel Avim. A Talmud Chacham, a Rebbe, for a lot of times for a person, is something even more than just a reservoir of Torah knowledge, a reservoir of Torah guidance and wisdom, not even a strength of Tala B'Ilanei Rav Reve, somebody who's a strong, tall tree that you could hang your hat on. But not only that, but just purely Demus Diokno Shel Avim, but just an image, a visage. And I could say, I used to joke about my Rebbe who's sitting here. I used to joke with people that when the Rebbe's plane would land in New York, I could feel it. I actually would feel it. I would start, you know, getting a little nervous. You know, am I doing the right thing? Am I doing what I should do? There's a certain Demus Diokno. When a person's been exposed to big people, to real people, so the visage, just the face. I think Rav Tversky's not here, so my son-in-law has a big picture in his house of Rav Tversky's, so he feels like whenever, you know, gets the urge to maybe do something wrong, he just looks at the picture of Rav Tversky and he says, you know, there's no way he's even going to think about doing it. Just in closing, I was looking today, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, who we're going to hear about tonight, and certainly we're all still, those of us at NCSY Kollel, for many, many summers, Rav Aaron used to come and speak to the Kollel, gave so graciously of his time. Personally, I had a very, very nice keshe with Rav Aaron. I learned with him for a year, but even after that, had a very beautiful keshe with him. A lot of the guys who went to Gush were jealous of the fact that you never even went there. How do you have? I used to talk to him a lot, so I was just reading today. Rav Aaron famously stated, he didn't quite say it in these words, but just to, you know, he famously stated, you know, basically that he feels that his faith came because he saw three people. He saw Rav Huttner, who we're going to hear about somewhat tonight, and Rav Soloveitchik, and Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik and Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. And he talks about how a lot of his faith comes not as much from the ideas of Torah, but from the people who he saw and interacted with. So for this and so many other reasons, it is such a, I can tell you in my own life, it has been such an incredible source of strength for me to have a connection with Rabbein, to have a connection with great people. And I certainly know that, I certainly hope in such a great topic there are benefits and others chose tonight to speak about. And I only hope that everybody walks away from the experience that we'll have tonight with a greater appreciation of how important it is for a person to develop kisharim with talmidei chachamim, with tzaddikim, and how having those kisharim could really be a life changer. So without further ado, let me tell you what the schedule of tonight is going to be. First, at the very beginning, we're going to hear first from Rabbi Blachman, followed by Rabbi Tarrigan, just first opening remarks about their Rabbeim. Remarks about their Rabbeim and what their Rabbeim meant to them. That'll be the opening remarks. And then afterwards, we're going to pose some questions to the panel about having a Rebbe, about the limits of having a Rebbe, about how one should choose a yeshiva to go to or a Rebbe. Maybe we'll stay away from that one. How one should choose his Rebbe and his Rabbein, his Rebbe Muvak. Or if one Bechlal should choose a Rebbe Muvak. Learning from different Rabbein, how does one balance, or how does one disagree with a Rebbe? What level of independence should a person have from his Rebbe? Let's say a person disagrees with the Rebbe. So without further ado, for the opening remarks, Rebbe, if Rebbe can share us opening remarks about Rebbe's Rebbe.
They should enjoy this. Don't laugh too hard. Good evening. I've done many things in life, but now I'm going to spend 15 minutes to be a storyteller. Let's see if I'm good. Asked to speak about my rebbeim, and if I understand correctly, the word rebbe means, are we talking about my mentors or people who influenced my life? I'm guessing that you meant my mentors. So this is going to be a limited conversation. I did have in life, at Baruch Hashem, I had two great mentors. I had a bit of a background to understand how I developed the relationship with the first one. The second one was already easy. It was over. I was a young boy. I finished high school younger than most of you boys. I turned 15 already after high school in Hebron Yeshiva. This was many years ago, way before the Six-Day War. And in Hebron Yeshiva, you were all of a sudden introduced to a hall full of people, which were a lot of them were very qualified, and you were expected, we were learning Yevamis, I remember this. It was the first Masechta. So, I mean, Vashtetzach, you talk to the Rashivit, what did you say, Pshat and Bala say in Island, the Raj with the Islanders? What do you want from me? I just came from America. And it was understood that you were sitting in an Athenian situation where you're demanded to know and to learn. There was no breaks. First time we went home was 2.5 years after I came, as opposed to people here going home every 2 months or something like that. That's how it started. It was 2.5 years after I came that we went back. So I was introduced to a world of excellence, a world which was demanding, a world which was all-encompassing. I repeat again, it was truly an Athenian experience of culture. People were reading, talking, just getting the feeling of this. I remember I was, after night, say, at 12 midnight, we used to go to a ice cream parlor, which was open on King George Street. Was called Cafe Alaska. I remember this. At 12:15, used to go there to have a bit of ice cream. So here I am, and afterwards, where would you go? Back to Geula to eat the ice cream? So you go into the streets of Jerusalem, And we used to discuss things. So in those days, the atmosphere was, we were talking about socialism, Trotskyism, you know, how to change the world, issues, ideals. It was unbelievable. And I still remember one night walking in Rehov Alfasi with a friend of mine, licking my ice cream. This was like 1 a.m. And who comes down the street? Rabbi Yisrael Alter, the Ger Rebbe. He looks at us. He says, Kimehedi, come here. What's your name? My name. What are you doing here? He says, I'm eating ice cream and talking to my friend. What are you talking about? Ech, basic, socialism, you know, tikkun olam, I don't know what. He looks at me, slaps me, and says, make sure you have good friends. And just walked away. That was the world we grew up in. You had daily olam at your fingertips, which would talk to you, and you're only 15 and 16. You saw greatness, you saw excellence, you saw people, which, I repeat, you're in Athens. You're sitting between Friday night, just an example, I would go after Seder, we'd go and have a chumash here with a professor in Hebrew University called Professor Yisrael Eldad, one of the founders of the Stern Gang. This was my chumash class. We were thirsty for knowledge. And then we had a shiur with Reb Lezer Pachinsky, which was a grandson of the Alter of Slabodka. It was a quest for knowledge. We were hungry, thirsty, and we were surrounded by greatness. Shabbos afternoon, a chabur with Reb Chaim Shmulevitz. I remember did ksubas with him. Maitri Shabbos, a chabur with Reb Tzal Jolti, Rav Yerushalayim. In that context, I wanted a teacher. In that context of being an ear molly cipher, that you just want to know more because you see there's so much to know. And you realize that life is so shallow without it. We're all very proud to be Jews and proud to be Bnei Torah. Kihen Chayenu was not just something you sing. Yeah, that's all. Little kids that thought they knew a little more than they did. But we dreamed. And I got to say before I go further, you will never have a Rebbe unless you know how to dream. Because if you don't know how to dream, you can stand in front of greatness, you won't see it. And I was zeicher in a crazy way because Chevron Yeshiva was a very independent school. We were taught critical thinking and pure independence. One would almost say, you know, well, I don't describe, there was a lot of freedom. We'll leave it at that. But we all learned because we wanted to. But that's why you would find boys like, I remember one winter on Wednesday nights, I went to Hebrew U to hear Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik. I'm going to get fired soon, but not at the stage they can't fire me anymore. I mean, I'm trying to say, before we go further, the quest for knowledge, the quest for finding a truth, is the prerequisite to having a Rebbe. Because if not, I remember Rehutna described to me, says, you want these guys for Talmidim, you're going to walk into the Beis Medrash. They're going to put a knee on top of a knee and wiggle their cigarettes. And they'll say, no, what's he got to say today? That's not a Talmud. A Talmud is not someone who says, oh, what's he got to say today? Will he enlighten me? That's not what we're starting from. A Talmud is a person which is looking and searching and hoping this man will somehow quench his thirst. Without that, there's nothing here. That's the Aleph Beis. So I still remember how I was a Chevron Yeshiva, and I had a chavrusa for 3 years, and then one of the Yeshiva's son-in-laws, which afterwards became a Rosh Yeshiva of the Mir Yeshiva, before Shmuel Levitz, he stole my chavrusa, Zichron Levrach. Not my chavrusa, him. He stole my chavrusa. And I still remember that this was Summersman. I had a great chavrusa. We went for so many years that he took a good chavrusa. What can I do? And my chavrusa jilted me. So that also didn't help my ego. And I decide, you know what, I'm going back to America, and I'll go, I'm not going to be here and not be happy. So I'm going to just go back to America. You know, the world's open for me. I have a passport. And go back there. I had spent a year before one summer in Lakewood. I couldn't stand it because I was so tied to this Chevron Yeshiva emotionally. But I figured, you know, if this isn't working, I can go back there. Out of the blue, one day, because this little brother, my Rebbe, one of the Rosh Hashivas, calls me over and says, listen, you're not looking good. I hadn't spoken to him before. He says, you're not looking good. So I said, Shalom Aleichem, my name is Mendel Blachman. So he looks at me, you really think I don't think look after you? I do, but I don't have to tell you. That was the first thing I heard, that someone cared that I was alive. Very important thing. Says, what's wrong with you? So I says, you know, it's not going good. I want to leave. So he says, come over to my house. And we sat and he told me, listen, remember one thing. In all your life, things are not always going to be good. Never run away from a challenge to look for safety. Rise to the challenge and then leave to look for something better. Stay. So I said, I'll think about it. I came back the next day, said, listen, I will stay here, but I need someone to hit me on the head once a week. He says, what do you mean? I need someone that I'm going to have to talk to and learning, and he's going to really tear me apart and show me where I'm right and where I'm wrong. I need, in Yiddish we say, a kanchi, I need a staff. He looks at me, he says, you sure you want this? He says, yes, I want this. Okay, we'll do it. Well, that went on for 3 weeks, then we became chavrusa for 10 years. Basically, we ended up learning minimum 4 hours a day, many times it was six. Even after I got married, I used to learn with him night seder. This went on for 10 years. It all started with one thing. The little boy decided that he's looking for someone which is going to set him straight. So you have to look for something. This man, I learned so much from him. It's too much for me to talk. He was my mentor. He raised me as a child. I ate in his house. If I was sick, I would be in his house. I wouldn't be in the dorm. He had 2 bedrooms, and he gave me one of them. He raised me. I still remember when I was dating, and there was a certain Shaila, and the things weren't simple. I go to the house one day and I ask the Rebbe, so where is he? Oh, he's on the way to the airport. He's going to fix this for you. So I ran to the airport. I stopped him. I didn't want him to go. For him, a Talmud was a child. I made you. You're mine. I will take care of you. That's what it was. What did I learn from Rebbe Zisler? Rebbe Zisler was a person that 5 o'clock in the morning was obviously ready by the Gemara. And he did not stop. During the day, he laid down on a chair with his feet up for a quarter of an hour from 2 to 2:15 with a radio because he held it. He has to know the news. That's din. He has to know current events. So for 15 minutes, I remember he used to have this radio. And he used to sit from 2 to 2:15. Afterwards, back to the books. Literally back to the books. I used to leave his house at night at 12:15. His sister was up every morning at 4. The man did not sleep more than 3.5 hours a night. This was the man. This was a person which Lulei Tairoscha Shashua Ozavati Ba'ani. I'm not talking about the knowledge I got from him. I'm not talking about the way of thinking. I'm talking about life. The Torah was his life. To the extent that he was so emotional, I stopped wearing a tie. I used to wear a tie, but he was always pulling it when I was saying the wrong thing. I just took it off. It was terrible. I remember once, I was telling my students that we're learning, and I set up shot in the Tosis. We were learning Erevin, I remember, the sixth parrot. He said, looks at me, says, why do you speak Lashon Hara on my mother? I said, I don't know your mother. The Tosis is my mother. You just said Lashon Hara on the Tosfos. It's a crew of pshat. You know what? I still think my pshat was right. But I would expect me to think my pshat was right. But you know what? I learned something that day. Tosfos is my mother. It's my womb. It's what forms me. It's the source of my life. And when I don't treat it seriously enough, and I say something which is, excuse my sins, over-creative, that's Lashon Hara. Because it's supposed to be emes. And unless you're convinced it's emes, thus is Lashon Hara, not Tosfos. No, it's not written in any books. Don't have a source for it. But it's called Torah's Chaim. It's called living Torah. That's your life. That's who you are. This was a person which was a prince. A person that used to send me at night with envelopes to go to houses and different places in Jerusalem and actually stick them under the door. He had people which would give, don't give him money, and he would actually do this. Small things about great people are not in the small things. It's what they do, the small things that count. The compassion for people, the caring about people. No, you want that. Okay, I'll get it real quick there. That was my Rebbe. Then, well, I moved on, got myself engaged, and there were two friends. His name was Rav Huttner. There was Rav Blazer Goldschmidt, a friend of Levracha, and Rav Zimtzum Zissel. They were old friends from Hebron. And I said, well, this kid needs someone to harness him. Because if not, God knows what's going to happen to him. He needs another staff on his head. That's the way it is. When you're a free-thinking, creative, analytical thinker, you're not mekabel ol. It's very hard to be mekabel ol. Says he cannot go to a regular kollel. It ain't going to work. God knows where he'll end up. And they were probably right. It says, we're going to put him in a place that he's going to teach you how to behave. And they hooked me up with one of the most prominent thinkers that I ever met, the Rosh Yeshiva of Chaim Berlin, Reb Yitzchak Huttner. He at that time had come to Eretz Yisrael. And he had a private little group of learners. There were eight of us, that's all. Private group, wasn't part of any yeshiva or anything. He was affiliated with a yeshiva here based in Talmud, but this was his private group. We learned the shiur was in his house. And I was there. So the first day I learned for Huttner, never forget this, is here I am walking in, I'm 24, and I'm sure that I'm God's gift to humanity. Come on, you know, after all, you know what I mean? And I'm there, and I said, well, tell me something, but make sure it's intelligent. He didn't say true. I demand more than that today. But say something wise. Okay. So I remember what I talked about. Remember talking about Shemitah Sofim. I still remember what I talked about. And he looked at me after he listened very attentively. He listened. Then he looks at me and says, good, you're good raw material. I loved him for that. I learned two things. First of all, that raw material is a good compliment. It had to be. That's number one. The biggest thing, if you want to sit by me, understand your raw material. Because I am going to form you. And I'm going to put you somewhere. That was my Shalom Aleichem with Rashiv Zichron Bracha. It didn't take a year, and I became Chavrusa with his son-in-law. Rashiv used to call us in many times, and I want to tell you what he demanded. He was a broad, intelligent person which had allergy for people who are myopic. He couldn't stand myopic thinking. He loved broad-minded understandings and scope. Just to show an example, I don't know if any of you know any of the old Hebrew poetry. There's a famous poem by Bialik called Hamatmid. Very beautiful poem. So I used to go with him once a week. And we used to talk and learning about what I was learning that week. And the way he used to do it, he would start a Rambam, say, no, finish it. You know, it ain't fair. But you knew that you're going to walk in there, you better finish it. Because if you don't finish it, he will... You will wish you were a Kairach. You don't know it. Like he was, what are you doing here? He would demand. He was a sergeant major for greatness. He couldn't stand mediocre reality. He once told me, Mendel, there's two averus in the Torah which are the biggest. Asur liyot shoteh v'asur liyot benoni. This was his motto. You should not be mediocre and should not be non-intelligent, we'll call it that way. You must always think and you must strive for more than just being mediocre. Because every one of you can be much more than just mediocre. Just dream, for goodness sakes. Rav Hutner demanded a malach makeh v'omer gedal. That was him. So I'm going to give you an example. I walk in one day. I figured we're going to talk Rambam. And I knew my Rambams. He says, and he starts quoting Bialik's poem. And he says, New Mendel, finish it. He says, what do you want from me? I'm a nice Jewish kid. He says, this then I'm words. You, I expect to know this. Go home, read it, and then we'll talk about it. That's not what you expect from an art scroll story of a gadol of a Moshe Dolei Torah of a Gadol Yisrael. But if anybody knows, quote unquote, the Mesoira of Slobodka, the approach of Chinuch of the Alt of Slobodka, greatness, open-mindedness, broadness, the capability of dealing with multiple issues in a colorful way. Yes, that's what he demanded. He demanded total allegiance. But you know what? He gave you everything. I'll never forget my sister had a terrible accident. And she was an invalid for many years. I had come flying from Paris to New York. Every day, she would call me to ask me how she is. Now, people were scared of her. You have to understand. Every day, he would call me, Nu, was macht sie? And then I was stupid enough to leave America without calling him first to tell me. He found out where I was in Paris. He called me up and said, Du bist ein Eisworth. You're a lowlife. I don't sleep nights because of your sister, and you leave America without telling me about her? Once again, you met greatness. You met a person which is all the way up there, but cared, davened, and didn't sleep well because of the tsar of a sister of a Talmud. If that isn't a father, I don't know what fathers are. I still remember, I'll add one more anecdote because I can tell end of the stories about this man. Remember, it was towards my end of term in the Kollel, and I was younger than most of them, so most of them had left earlier and already had their jobs, whatever they were doing. And a new batch of boys were going to come in. He called me in. I remember I used to wear like beige suits and Panama hats in the summer. He says, oh, I like your hat. Let me see it. He says, don't get too close to the cows. Nice way of saying don't be a behemoth. But he had his ways. He says, Mendel, I'll tell you why I want to talk to you. I know that you will be older than most of the new boys coming in. I want you to know, I really want you to be with me. But I also know you may be uncomfortable learning with boys 5-6 years younger than you. Mendel, I will support you until you have your job, even if you learn in bells. I'll never forget him saying it. You're mine. I will take care of you. But you will learn wherever you feel comfortable. Don't think you have to sit in this place. You know what that is? That's a person which was your father. So you know what a Rebbe is? Yeah. A Rebbe is someone that's your father. A Rebbe is someone which you want to emulate because he's wise, he understands what you need, and won't let you be small, will drive you to be great. So I really hope you find one of those. It makes it yours.
Everybody knows that Targ has provided an incredible service to the world since his Rebbe was Nifter just a short time ago. He has really publicized so much about his Rebbe, and he's really inspired so many people. I can speak personally just to give Hakaras HaTov about listening to his telling her about his Rebbe. And it was a real schuss for us tonight to hear from Rav Targan about his Rebbe, also Mori Varabi, Rav Lichtenstein, Zechatzad of the Rebbe.
Yashkoach, Rav Lachman, Yashkoach. I want to tell you a story about myself, about someone that I wasn't Zelka to learn a lot from, but I consider myself a Talmud of, a different Gadol, who isn't on the program tonight. I came back to Yeshiva University in 1985, and I went to the Rav Shir, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. And I was only in his Shir for a couple weeks because he stopped giving Shir in that winter. And then he retreated back to Boston, and in 1993 he was Nifter. And I remember standing at his Levaya in Boston, looking at the Urim, and speaking to him. He didn't know who I was. I hardly learned anything from him at that stage. He wasn't even giving Shiur and Gemara. He was giving Shiur and B'chaims. You know who the Bochin of the class was? The first in the American Tassel by Tversky. He was the Bochin. And I said, Rebbe, you never knew me, but I was one of your last Talmidim. I was the last Talmud. But I promise you, B'li Neder, I'll become your Talmud. Even though I'll never learn Torah directly from your mouth, but I'll be a Talmud of your Talmidim. And I tried my hardest to be a Talmud of the Rav through Mari Barabi of Lichtenstein, through Rabbi Schechter, who Baruch Hashem had the schus to be with this summer. I think he left this evening. Many others, Rabbi Willig, Rabbi Kamenetsky mentioned, many, many others. And that's the difference between a Rebbe and a Gadol. We're here tonight to talk about Rebbeim, and Rabbi Nachman talked about two Gadolim. Before we talk about Rebbeim, let's talk about Gedolim. Why are these people meaningful to you? You'll never have met them. You'll never meet Rav Simcha Zissel. You'll never meet Rav Huttner. Unfortunately, you'll never meet Rav Aaron. Rebbe's have Talmidim. Baruch Hashem had the schus to teach for many years, to influence my Talmidim, their families, their children, Baruch Hashem. I don't imagine I'm going to have an influence on the Talmidim of my Talmidim. Wherever I'm Zelcha to teach, I'll influence their lives and their children. But if they never learned with me and from me, I don't think I'll ever cast a really deep influence on them. That's the chilek between a Rebbe and a Gadol. A Gadol's influence is so profound and is so intense and is so elastic, as Rabbi Blachman said before, that it doesn't just influence the people that sat in front of him, but the people that have the schus to be Talmidim. Secondary Talmidim. So that's why hearing some of these stories is so important to you. You'll never learn Rav Aaron's Torah, but you can be a Talmud of his Talmidim and be his Talmud. You'll never learn Rav Huttner's Torah from him directly, but you hear from his Talmud and you'll be a Talmid Talmidim in the same way that I saw myself all these years as a Talmud of the Rav, even though I hardly spent any time in a shir. Because my formative years were spent with people that influenced him that were my Rebbeim. And I count myself as not a Talmud, but a Talmud Talmidim. So I want to tell you tonight about Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, who I was close to spend 32 years of my life with. And I was thinking to myself this year, as I've been coming up to you mentioned, and speaking a lot about him, but also processing for myself. Because my world changed. As Rav Lachman said, he was like my father, literally like my father. Rav Lachman mentioned Rav Huttner. Rav Huttner, in one of his letters to a Talmud, writes that when the first great yeshiva was started in Volozhin, Rav Chaim Volozhina, in 1801, the first modern yeshiva, all the yeshivas stem from Volozhin one way or another. So Rav Chaim Volozhina made a change in how to refer to the students. Typically, students were referred to as Talmidim. But all of a sudden, Rav Chaim Volozhina said, now we refer to them as B'nai Yeshiva. Which has a lot of different connotations, but one of them is the relationship that Rav Lachman spoke about, worrying about your Talmud sister and worrying about in the middle of the night that you're my son and you're my child, and it's not just how much Torah I teach you. So I made two very, very bold decisions in my life that this year I realized were not bold at all. When I finished Yeshiva University in 1987, I came right back to learn in Eretz Yisrael, even though all my friends were staying and moving on professionally. I decided I wanted to spend more time in Yeshiva. And then in 1993, just as I had all these career options in America, I decided to make Aliyah, and I didn't really have any future options that were clear to me. It's just I'm going to go learn in Kollel. And in my whole life, I was very proud of those choices, because they're very, very brave choices to make. To throw away a budding career in America just to come to Israel and be a Kollelnik. To come back when all your friends are advancing to graduate school and medical school and making money, and you're 22 years old, and you go back in yeshiva like Rav Nachman said, and learn with guys younger than yourself. I realized this year, I don't deserve any credit for those decisions. In 1987, I didn't come back to learn in yeshiva. Merv Aaron wasn't in Eretz Yisrael. I came back to be Merv Aaron. Well, I wasn't a thoughtful, prestigious, intelligent decision. I wanted to get back to Merv Aaron as fast as possible. Then 4 or 5 years later, I'm married. I want to go back and be with Merv Aaron. It wasn't a decision I should get any credit for. He compelled people to make decisions because he lived life with such conviction, such purity. I call it volitional compulsion, where you want to be forced to do something. And you're happy to be forced to do something. Because you don't know why it makes sense, but you know that a person greater than you has ratified that decision, and you suspend your freedom of choice, and we'll talk about that a bit later, when you do and when you don't, but you realize that you're being twisted, your arm's being twisted. So very briefly, let me tell you about his life, or what the Talmidim picked up from him. As Rav Nachman said before, Gedolim in our world begin and end with Talmud Torah. Begin and end with their ability to demonstrate the Dvar Hashem to us. And not just because of the volume of Torah they possess, but because of the sweep, and because if we want to see it as the word of Hashem, when you're 18, you can't see a detail and it tells us in Erev is Dvar Hashem. You need someone that sees the whole mass, that sees the whole fabric, that tells you about that detail and it tells us in Erev connects to another detail in a Rashba and Yevamos, and a third detail in a Rosh Zeruah, in Lech HaShabbos. Oh, this is the Dvar Hashem. It's not just details, but it's a network of Hashem's will about everything. Because unless you meet a Gadol, you'll never see it as Dvar Hashem. It'll just be details and information and another line and another Gemara. But all of a sudden, when someone sees the whole system and every single statement connects to every other statement because it's Dvar Hashem, because Hashem is indivisible and His Torah is indivisible, so no matter where you enter, you're connected to the entire network, then you convince yourself that it's worth investing the type of effort that Rav Nachman described. I have a secret for you. Much of what he told you about Rav Simcha Zisal and about Rav Funder, I can tell you, guess how many hours Rav Lichtenstein slept at night? No more than 4. Rav Lichtenstein once told me, don't listen carefully to this, that in his entire life, he never took an afternoon nap. Never. Because he felt it was immoral and betraying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he should take the time that Hashem, like stealing money. Someone gives you money to purchase something, and you take the money and redirect it or divert it. So Hashem gave you time and energy, and you spend that time going schluffing, going to sleep that next day. But you also need someone that doesn't just give you that volume of Torah, but that also gives you the sense of the Masorah. That what happens in 2016, you're learning a Gemara today, you learn Megillah, you learn Kriyas HaTorah, and all of a sudden he takes you back, not just because he quotes a pshat, but because he lives as a connector to that Masorah. And you're right back in 1916 with Rav Elchanan, and you're back in 1816 with the Chassam Sofer, and you're back in 1616 with the Shach, and you're back in 1216 with the Rabbeinu Tam in France, and you don't need a plane, and you don't care about time machines, because it's not just the Torah Kodesh Baruch Hu gave us at Har Sinai, but it's the Torah that Am Yisrael's been kona with blood and tears, Yodei Shemecha. And it's not just about, as Rav Nachman said before, the myopia, which is narrow-mindedness of what's happening in 2016, the Torah is beyond any of that. Because it's 2016 and 1416 and 1016 with the Rif, and the year 016 with Rabbi Akiva. And when I put my head down at night and I think about HaKadosh Baruch Hu and why I believe, it's exactly what Rabbi Kamenetsky said, because Rav Lichtenstein told me that. It's not because of any theory or abstract concept. I met great people, others including Reb Lichtenstein, who are far smarter than me, and they were mekabel this Torah, and they transferred this Torah to me, and they connected me to the Masara. I'm not just living here July 27, 2016. A Yid who studies Torah, and any Yid who lives in Eretz Yisrael, any Yid lives as part of history. And lives as part of the history of Torah. Rav Lichtenstein would stand in front of the Beis Medrash. Imagine this, 500 Israelis. I mean, real Israelis. None of them spoke a word in Yiddish. And whenever he'd say something, he first said it in Yiddish, and then he translated it to Hebrew. Why? Because he wanted us to feel that we're back in Volozhin. He really saw our yeshiva as Volozhin, with changes, with modifications. But we had conversations about this. What do we do in Volozhin? What should we do in yeshiva? When he first came to teach in the yeshiva, he actually consulted with Rav Huttner and Rav Aaron about how he should run the yeshiva. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein consulted with Rav Aaron's elevation. So he built his yeshiva in the model of what Rav Huttner had provided from Slobodka, and back to the logic. Let me tell you my moment in yeshiva as part of the Masara. Rav Aaron was giving shir on the Siyas Kapayim, Kol Ram, the Beis Halevi. He quotes the Beis Halevi. What did the Beis Halevi have to say about Nesiyas Kapayim? Did a Kohen be Motzei another Kohen, Nesiyas Kapayim Shomer Kohen? It's all Beis Halevi. Then he said, but Reb Chaim, the Beis Halevi's son, argued on his father, the Beis Halevi, because the Machlok is Beis Halevi, Reb Chaim, plenty. Then he says, but Reb Moshe Soloveitchik, Reb Chaim's son, argued with his father, Reb Chaim, and agreed with his grandfather, the Beis Halevi. Yes, and I have three daras of Brisker Torah. I know what the Beis Halevi said. I know what his son Reb Chaim said. I know what his grandson Reb Moshe Soloveitchik said. And he said, but the Rav told me, the Rav was Reb Moshe Soloveitchik's son, that when he learned this with his father Reb Moshe, he disagreed with his father, agreeing with his grandfather Reb Chaim, disagreeing with his great-grandfather, the Beis Halevi. So now I have four generations of Brisker Torah. Then Rav Aaron said, but when I learned the Gemara with the Rav, I told the Rav that I dafka agreed with, I'm trying to keep track like a scorecard, I dafka agreed with Reb Moshe, disagreeing with him, disagreeing with the Chaim, and agreeing with the Beis Halevi. And then I promise you, in the middle of this year, he says, last night I was learning this Gemara with my son Moshe, who's now the Rosh Hashiva, and he told me that he disagreed with what I said. He agreed with the Rav, disagreeing with the Moshe, agreeing with the Chaim. What does that mean to me? I raised my hand. Can I get in on the action? He said, who are you? I'm a Talmud of the Rav. No, you're not. All of a sudden, I'm at Har Sinai. I'm not a Beis Medrash in the West Bank anymore. I'm standing at Har Sinai. And it's the confidence that you're receiving Torah from Har Sinai. And it's a confidence that lets you be from in your own skin, not looking over your shoulder, trying to outdo the next person with the length of your tzitzis and how black its filling are and how many RPMs during davening you shuckle with, because you met great people. They brought you back to Har Sinai. And you're a pale shadow of them, but you know their derech is a derech that will get you back to Har Sinai. It's that sense of connecting. And that's why Rav Bachman made one mistake. The biggest decision is not which yeshiva you'll choose. Because that's Mishigas. The bigger decision is in 10 years from now, when you move to a community, will you choose a community where there's a Rav that will connect you? Because in any yeshiva you choose in Eretz Yisrael, you'll have connectors. The bigger question is, will you choose a community based on where the train is, where the real estate taxes are low, and where there are nice parks? Or number one will be, where's there a Rav that I can make my Rav? A Seir LeCharav. It's obvious. It's a no-brainer. It should be at the top of your list. You choose a community based on the Rav, and not as easy to find as yeshivas. Yeshivas is, you spoil. I choose this one, that one. Communities is a tougher time. But what made Rav Aaron so compelling to us was that it didn't stop there. He once told us about Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, that he was also close with. They used to say about Rav Shlomo Zalman that if he weren't at Gadol Ador, he said it in Yiddish, as v'zayin d'sheinste yid in Yerushalayim, he would have been the nicest Jew in Yerushalayim. That's how kind he was. That's how sweet he was. And immediately when Rav Aaron said that, we knew that he was unknowingly talking about himself. I'm certain, on Me'ev Esrim Shana, I'm never going to meet a nicer person than Rav Aaron. I won't. And in life, it's hard to find that combination, and most people excuse themselves, give themselves a break. Okay, I'm a Talmud Chacham. Okay, I have nice midos, but I'm not going to be the midos guy. I'm the Talmud Chacham. I'm the Lamdan. I'm the one who's breaking my head on Tosas Arash. I'm the one who's breaking my head on Shachs and Tassis. I'm not going to be mean. I'm not going to be rude, but the midos people, those are for Balabatim. Those are for grandmothers. Those are... Because we make these divisions. Because there's only so many resources we have. So if I'm going to pour into the Shasin post, I'm not going to pour into my Midos. Rav Aaron said to us, very quietly, never went like this, but implicitly, we never talked like this. I'm Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. I'm one of the Gedolei Ador. I work on my Midos. He never said this, but that was the implicit message. One after another. I have a friend of mine, when he hit 40, once went over to 40, 43, went over to Rav Aaron, a Talmud of Rav Aaron, said, Rebbe, now that I'm 40, because I'll say you can start learning Kabbalah when you pass 40, maybe I shouldn't skip those parts of the Ramban that are Kabbalah. And when the Ramban says, Apia MS, we skip those parts. We read the rational parts of the Ramban. Maybe now that I'm 40. It wasn't what Rav Aaron answered him, but how he answered. You know what Rav Aaron said to him? He said, those parts of the Ramban were not meant for people like you and me. And my friend was flabbergasted. In what universe are you and me in the same sentence? How could you possibly make a sense? You're the God of Ador. I'm just a nothing. What does it mean for you and me? You can't conjugate that sentence, you and me. That's how humble he was. Stories upon stories, sometimes, as Rav Lachman demonstrated, people are so great you can't capture them in prose. You have to tell stories because words just don't capture them. You have to make it more graphic in stories and stories and stories. Sitting in the front row, one boy turns to his friend and says, Aaron, what time is it? Who do you think answers? He never wanted to get caught saying Aaron within a 10-foot radius of Rav Aaron because he didn't answer the question. You know who cried at his shiva? I was there at the shiva. We all cried. But the biggest criers at the shiva were three unlikely groups. The Aniyim, because they abused him. They would line up outside. I'd walk by at night. They'd line up outside of his house. One after another, they'd come in. Inevitably, there'd be people who were suffering medical crisis. They didn't have jobs. They'd cry a little. Rav Aaron would kindly engage them in conversation. Maybe it's time to get a job. They didn't know who he was. They say, what do you mean? You know, I have to learn Torah. They'd start to argue with him, and then he'd write them large checks, one after another. He just, even though he disagreed, even though he tried, even though they insulted him, just gave him big checks. The grocery store owner from Katamon, that he hadn't lived in Katamon for 10 years, he had lived in the Gush for the last 10 years of his life. He came and said, I'll never meet a nicer person, and you certainly won't read these in the Gedolim books, not that there'll be Gedolim books. The following people were bawling their eyes out. Eid, Muhammad, Ismail, the Palestinian staff at Yeshiva. Because he was mocked with every Rosh Hashanah, when everyone was busy going to the mikvah and preparing their tefillos, and he went to every single Palestinian worker, and he wished them a Shana Tova, and a good year. And they were bawling. They're not going to see this on CNN. The Palestinians bawling in his shiva. At weddings, he danced from the opening bell. You know how most Rosh Yeshivas come in to the circle, dance a few minutes, and then move out. Opening bell, closing bell. Wire to wire. Simchas Chasam Rekala. How could you do anything? That's what he's there for. And then the dancing ended, and he'd spend an hour and a half talking to the older people that no one pays attention to at the weddings. The great-grandmother, the great-grandfather, that everyone's ignoring. He would make it his business to sit there and then get back for the second round of dancing, wire to wire. And then it was time to go home, and we'd offer him a ride. He refused to get in the car if it meant separating a husband and a wife. He would sit in the back. Imagine what it felt like traveling with Rav Aaron in the back seat, but he wouldn't get into the car. He said, who am I to come between a man and his wife on a night they have together? His sensitivity, his humility. You know how when someone comes to talk to you, you listen, but while you're listening, you're already planning what you're going to say and how you're going to respond. And sometimes you don't have the patience to even wait until they're finished, so you butt in, and then the conversation, nothing rude, nothing terrible. You'd go to Rav Aaron, and he'd sit there listening for 40 minutes until you were finished your entire presentation, and then he'd repeat every line with his input. They tell a story that when he first came to the yeshiva in 1971, the Israelis didn't know what to make of him. He doesn't have a beard, he's a doctor. So he sat down in the base medrash, and they said, we're going to see who this guy really is. Let's send over the top Talmud to grill this new Rebbe. So they sent over Yaakov Medan. So Rav Medan, who's now Rosh Hashiva, comes over to Rav Aaron, and he says, I wanted an answer in a Tosfos. So he's only come. You don't just blurt out a line in a Tosfos. A Tosfos is talking about such and such. I'm up to this line. Can you help me? Rav Aaron sat there like this, because he was waiting for Yaakov Medan to finish his question, respectfully. Rav Yaakov Medan assumed that Rav Aaron wasn't following. So he made it more simple. He says, well, we're learning the Gemara, and the Gemara talks about this and this, and he tried to make it simpler, because he assumed that Rav Aaron wasn't following. And Rav Aaron sat there like this, waiting for him to finish. So Rav Medan assumed that he doesn't know what's going on, so he made it even easier. Well, it's called the Gemara, and you read it this way, and it's Daf Gimel, which is 3 in English. And Rav Aaron patiently waited for Rav Yaakov Medan to finish his question, and he rifled off about 60 sources, page number and line number, that answered his question. It's in Miriam Beitza on page 62, and it's in Or Zeruah, and Yochas Smachos on page 4. And Rav Medan came crawling back with his leg between his tails. Tells me, like, this is a serious guy. A couple years ago, I don't know if any of you know, we have a program in the yeshiva for special needs boys. Downs boys, Asperger's boys, autism. So every boy that leaves yeshiva gets to meet the Rosh Yeshiva. So there was about 10 special needs boys sitting in Rav Aaron's office. And he said, boys, do you have any questions? So one boy raised his hand and said, Rebbe, what's the difference between halacha and minhag? So I'm asking myself, how is the Gadol Hador going to stoop down to their level and explain halacha and minhag? But if you don't see yourself as a Gadol Hador, you care about every person, you get into their skin. So he says, boys, who likes baseball? They'll start raising their hands. Tell me your favorite teams. Mets, Yankees, Giants, Red Sox. Whipped up in a frenzy. Tell me your favorite stadiums. Yankee Stadium, City Stadium, Fenway Park. Then he says, who likes football? Cowboys, Giants, Raiders, Patriots, favorite stadiums, Gillette, one after another. Now they're really interested, really excited. Then he says, boys, you know how in baseball, the stadiums are all different dimensions. Sometimes center field is very deep. Sometimes you have a green monster. Right field is short. But in football, all the stadiums are the same. 100 yards from goal line to goal line, 30 yards from sideline to sideline. I said, boys, halacha is like football. It's the same in every city. Minhag is like baseball. You have to know which city you're in. What a gewaldic way. It's not such a big chiddush. About listening to people and not taking them for granted, not disrespecting them. No, we're a little late, so I'll just finish with one third part. You had someone that knew Kala Torah Kula, that connected us to the Masara, that challenged us. We always knew. You know, sometimes when someone talks to you, you say, does that person really live up to the standards that he's presenting? He's probably a hypocrite. He probably is two-faced. There's one voice that I see in the base medrash in the classroom when he goes home at night. And then when we meet people that we're convinced more or less the gap between them and they live by their principles and they live by their own musa, then we learn to trust them. Rav Aaron always spoke down to us. He demanded of us much less than he did for himself. It's not that we knew he was living the standards that he was expecting of us. We knew he was making it easy for us. He was saying to us, I want you implicitly to sleep 5 hours a night because I'm sleeping 3 hours. And I want you to miss lunch twice or three times a week because I never eat lunch. Because I'm busy learning or teaching. So a couple of years before he was Nifter, someone asked him, what do you want written on your tombstone? What should you write on the kever of such a gadol? You know what he said? He wants two words. Nothing floral, nothing exaggerated, nothing hyperbolic, nothing poetic, just two words. Eved Hashem. If you go to his keber, you will see that keber with only two words. And that's the third thing he showed us. Because again, people say, okay, I'm a smart yid. I think about Torah. I read a lot. I learn Shulchan Aruch. Maybe I work on my middos also. But you know the people who scream Yehi Shmei Rabbi in the shul? Those are the other people. We're not the screamers. You know the people who scream Berachas HaTorah? You know the people who shakal? We're more sophisticated. We're more modern. My Yiddishkeit is defined as how I can make my way through a Gemara, or I can make my way through a Ramban. Those religious expressions of Frumkeit, it's for the others, the less sophisticated. Varen said, not with speaking, first by doing. Not going to let you make that segmentation or bifurcation. Not going to let you compartmentalize. When he said Birchas HaTorah, you could hear Shamayim split. Ashrei ozen shashamu. Ashrei ozen shashamu. You'd hear Baruch HaTorah, Yeshmei Rabba screaming. Tehillim screaming. Dir Shoz Hashem B'Yimatzav screaming. We don't scream. We're more civil. Eva Lefnei Rabba. Dancing Simchas Torah. Holy Torah, age 75 when he just had hip surgery. Eva Lefnei Rabba. And so often today, and I'll just leave you with this, so often, and I'm guilty more than anyone, when we try to convince you to be from, especially at this age, we're trying to frame Frumkeit to you because it's redemptive and it's ennobling and it gives you meaning in life and principle and value and all those words. But don't get it wrong. Frumkeit is to be an Eved Hashem. It's to be an Eved. You're too young maybe to appreciate that, so we have to make it jive and we have to make it sound like the world you're living in. But that's not what you should be gunning for. We believe it to be an Eved Hashem is the highest calling. But he reminded us not to get too lost in our sophisticated talk and trying to synthesize. It's about being an Eved Hashem. About performing every mitzvah with care, ordering every midah, being honest, being humble, caring about Torah, caring about people. And he once told me, this is my last sentence, Avodas Hashem is about having shoulders that are strong enough to bear the weight without being crushed. You realize it's a weight, you accept the weight, you're happy to be no sell, and you're not crushed. So Baruch Hashem, you're hearing a lot tonight, we'll go to the second segment, but what does it mean to find a Rebbe? But every one of you should walk out of here realizing the schus you have. You're not living through their era, but you're living right after their era, their eras. And you're meeting people who spend so much time and so much of their growth in their Tzilut HaNusa, in their shadows, that you're the Klishenis. The passing Klishenis Mevasha.
Thank you very much.
Okay, what I'd like to do with the next part, we're going to divide it into two sections. Of hopefully 10 minutes each for each respondent. Instead of the four questions, we'll try to boil it down to two, just to make it a little bit simpler. And after some consultation, I'm going to divide the questions into two sections. The first section, what I'd like to ask Rabbi Tarrigan to speak first this time. Question is, how to choose a Rebbe, and how do you balance, or is it appropriate to have different rabbeim for different things, which I think are a little bit related. How to choose a Rebbe and how to manage when a person has different rabbeim. Is it appropriate to have different rabbeim? Do you have to only have one Rebbe for everything or to try to combine those two? And then first I'll have Rabbi Targan speak about that, and Rabbi Blachman. And then the second part we'll do about when to disagree and in what way a person should have independence from his rabbeim, and maybe also if there's time to talk about how one should relate to a Rebbe who you really feel has done something wrong
or a Rebbe who has gone the wrong way or the wrong path, and the fallibility of Rebbe. Maybe a little bit of that at the end. But first, the first half, to speak about how to choose a Rebbe, and is it appropriate to have different Rebbeim for different aspects? Rabbi Tarry.
Okay, before I answer the question, I just want to mention, you may not be aware of it, Rav Schechter just walked into the Beis Medrash, and I mentioned you before, Rabbi, as someone that helped me appreciate Rabbi Soloveitchik. I was in the end of his shir, at the end of his life, and Baruch Hashem, the Torah I learned from you, from others, helped me become the Talmud Talmid ever of the Rav's himself. So I want to wish you Teshuvah, you're living tonight, right? Teshuvah Mishon, you travel safely. And Baruch Hashem, when we're talking about meeting Gedolim and being in the presence of Gedolim, we spent a lot of time tonight about Gedolim. You never have the chance to meet, you'll never have the chance to meet, so you should appreciate the schlis you had over the summer and to learn with and in the same base matters as the chapter. Well, Rav Meir was a very interesting Tana. Rav Meir was a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva, and the backbone of Mishnayos is built on the Masara that Rabbi Meir picked up from Rabbi Akiva, and he was the Rebbe of Rabbi Danasi. So we're talking tonight about Talmidim and Rabbanim, so perhaps let me mention two statements of Rabbi Meir. And this is the exact same Rabbi Meir, and he made two different statements. One statement he makes, based on a pasuk in Koheles, if you learn by a certain Rebbe, don't say Dayi, don't say enough. Go learn by a different Rebbe. And Taka Rebbe Meir learned primarily with Rabbi Akiva, but also learned from Rabbi Ishmael, the Gemara says. And then in a different place, in others, Rav Nasan, Rav Meir says, Mishieshlo Rav Echad, I don't know the exact lashon, Lamao Domer, Lamishieshlo Sada Achaz, Zarachitim, Zarasarim. You have one Rebbe, it's like you have one field. One section is barley, one section is wheat, one section is grapes, far away, not Kilayim. And it's all Masudr, it's all organized. If you don't have a Rebbe, one Rebbe, Rav Meir says, then it's like you're all scattered and dispersed, and you've got chitin in one area and barley in another area, and it's hard to combine them. So Rabbi Meir was voicing both sides of the equation, both sides of the coin. Ideally, you should have one Rebbe, mix one field, one concentration, but he also wants you not to be trapped and to be able to take from as many people as you can. So presumably, in theory, before we get to the modern context, what Rav Meir meant is, should have one primary Rebbe, who's your Dvustiokno, as Rav Lachman said, Yosef HaTzadik. Rav Aaron once told us that if you face, Mamash like Yosef HaTzadik, I don't think according to the matters, if you find yourself caving into a bad midah, don't ask yourself what's right or wrong. Try to find someone whose midos you admire and ask yourself, how would that person behave? If you find Kass overcoming you, ask yourself, how would so-and-so respond to Kass? If you find Kinna, how would so-and-so respond to Kinna? So we actually asked Rav Aaron, who was your role model? Who was the person you thought of that you're instructing us? And interestingly, he said Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. We're all expecting him to say something else, and he said Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. So presumably, what Rav Meir was referring to is having one Rebbe Mufak that can give you as much as possible, but realizing that no one person can encompass, or no one derech. I tell Talmidim all the time in yeshiva that any Rebbe who uses these words, you should be a little bit cautious about. Any Rebbe who says, this is the Derech HaLimud. Are you talking? There's one way to learn Torah? Chalila b'chas. In our yeshiva, I imagine Reb Lachman Shem, how many marshas did you teach this year? Not too many. Because the types of things we're giving over are not necessarily in sync with what the marshas addressing in the sugya. But what would happen to the marsha walking through those doors right now? Every one of us would get on our feet, as Rav Kamenetsky said before, and run over and be Masala Bavak Raglov, and roll in his dust. Roll in his dust, despite the fact that I haven't taught our Masha in years. Because we don't have enough time in our lives to fully encompass Torah, Chavim Mini Aretz. So we choose the best we can, the derech we were given by our... So Rebbe says, this is my derech, and this is the way that I feel. I appreciate learning. I want to share it with you, and if you... Same thing. Rebbe says... This is the emes. This is the emes? That's a word that a bus of Adam can use? In the lama of the ship? This is the emes? One person can fully grasp the Rabbanu Shalom? One person? Really? The Gemara says in Tanya's Lassid Labo, the Tzaddikim are on a circle. Machal Tzaddikim Lassid Labo, the Kodesh Baruch Hu is in the center. And everyone's pointing to the center saying, Zeh Hashem Kivinu La Magila V'Nisbucha Bishu Asa. Why do you think the final alignment of the Tzaddikim is like a circle? Not a square, not a rectangle, not a triangle. Because what does a circle have geometrically? No, who took the geometry regions? Equal, infinite equidistant radio. So let's say for argument's sake, I don't know enough, but let's say for argument's sake, you're here in the circle. And let's say for argument's sake, the Bel Zechassah that Rabbi Blachman almost learned with is here in the circle. Let's say. So you're seeing the Rabbanu Shalom from 180 degrees, different angle. But you're both seeing the same Rabbanu Shalom. You're both in the circle of Torah Mitzvos. Your view is a little different than his view. I once asked Rav Amital, my other Rebbe, which derech should I not take from? And you know what Rav Amital told me? He says, any derech that says it's the only derech is Nishkin derech. If the derech says they're the only derech, then it proves they're not the derech. Everyone else you can feel free to take from. Now, two things have happened in the modern world that make it a little bit difficult to have a Rebbe Mufak for everything. Number one, did you listen to Reb Lachman? While you're playing basketball, he was in Chevron Yeshiva. You're going to come to Yeshiva for a year. Hopefully two. Maybe even three. Unfortunately, our world has changed. And the world, in most cases, doesn't allow us to be in yeshivas for 20 years, for 50, 10. Some people are very fortunate, but most people aren't. So that sense that you're going to have the Rebbe Mufak and spend 30 years with that Rebbe, or be in his house and be in his bedroom and be on the plane. Unfortunately. But for most of you, the good part is our benches are very deep, not just the basketball benches. So you'll come to yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. Hopefully you'll go back to yeshivas in America that are similar to yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael. You'll have Rebbeim that either learned from Rebbeim in America or taught Rebbeim. A Masara that sounds very similar. Rabbi Kamenetsky mentioned Rabbi Willard before. So when I was in America, Rabbi Willard was my posseg. I went to talk to Rabbi Willard. When I came to Eretz Yisrael, I had to find a new posseg. So I went to Rav Ezra Bick. Rav Ezra Bick and Rabbi Willard were chavusas in the Rav Shir. I don't imagine that much of their psak was very different. Right? So you're here, you learn for a Bam here, you go back. So it may not be a Rebbe Mufak, you'll have a Masara Mufak. Every one Masara, or opposed to it. But there's another thing that's happened today. It's called the age of specialization. It's very, very hard in today's world for people to encompass it all. And that's why it's so important to have different Rebbeim. I spoke before. I got from Rav Aaron Torah, and I got Midos, and I got Avodas Hashem. In many cases, you won't get all of that. And even if you do, will you also be holding a Nistar if you want to study Hasidus, if you want to study at a certain point the Olam HaNistar? Will be able to teach you about the world, the relationship of power to the world? It's hard. One of the things I appreciated about Rav Aaron is that he could dig as deep into a sugya as possible, down to the smallest little dig in the Bir Halacha. And then he could also tell me about how Torah relates to the world and to history. It's very hard to find people like that. Some people are horizontal, some people are vertical. It's hard to be both. There are a lot of great lecturers that can write books and tell you about Judaism and general culture. But they're not capable, very, very eloquent and very articulate, but they're not capable necessarily in excavating a Shach and a Taz, or a Ktsotsin and a Sivos, or a Devar Avram. And then there's some that can really help you excavate those, but that's not their talent, it's not their interest. To show you how Torah relates to the total experience and the total existence. So in today's world, I like to say you have to be a nasher. You're not going to come to one table and have everything Shulchan Aruch. And more or less through history, that's what Yeshua, we're just reading about Yeshua. And Yeshua was Lo Yamush Mipi Oel, Yeshua was Moshe's Talmud. But as you move through Tanakh, and you move more to the Tanaim and Amorayim, you have fewer and fewer examples. You still have examples, but you have fewer and fewer examples. And in most cases, the true gedolim are adarabba. The true gedolim are those that have multiple rabbanim. Rashi, there was no Torah in France. He had to go to Germany. He studied by multiple rabbeim, and he brought Torah back. You have some examples. The Maram Shik was the devoted Talmud Chassam Sofer in Hungary, 19th century. That was more or less his conduit. Reb Baruch Be'er, Talmud of Reb Chanan, learned a little in Tells, learned a little with Reb Chaim, learned a little with Chafetz Chaim. When I say little, I mean in his terms, not little for us. Not an hour here and an hour there. That's where it became Reb Chanan. Part of it was that exposure. So maybe I'll just leave the second question for Reb Lachman. What was the second question?
You did the second. You did the first.
Oh, so what was the first question?
How to choose the Rebbe.
How to choose a Rebbe and whether multiple Rebbeim is a good idea. Thank you, Moshe. I loved everything you said. Well, let's first talk about should you choose a Rebbe? Is there a religious imperative to choose a Rebbe? I think we have to start with that. I usually, when I build my theological life, I don't look at the Maharal. I usually go more to Rambam. Rambam, our two Mishnayos, the second Mishnah, Vaseilech HaRav, the Salik Min HaSofek, so the Rambam says, the Pshat is, the Pshat Halacha, you should not look in Sfeikas, you should always have someone to be Machmir Yerushalayim. Find a person that you trust or you feel he's competent, and he should be, as you mentioned, your poisek. Obviously, when it comes to Psak Halacha, L'chaira, unless you can never be Naita with a Psak of something and then choose another Rav for another Psak unless you're sure they don't clash. You'd have to be a pretty big Talmud Chacham to be able to do Machriya that the Psak of Rav X is not a steer to the Psak of Rav Y in another Sugya. I would imagine for people who are not well-versed, that would be a problem. Therefore, we quite advisable to have one Meirah. For a person which is much more well-versed and is capable of understanding the possibilities and the sources of Piskei Halacha, then I would imagine that it would be more than legitimate to have multiple Piskim for different topics. There are Mumchim in Zroim, which are not Mumchim in Chesha Mishpat. There are Mumchim in Chesha Mishpat, which are not Mumchim in Hilchos Shabbos. And I would imagine that you could take it for granted that there's no steerer between the psukim. So as far as that second din of Aseilech HaRav, yes, there is a halacha in Mishnah. It's actually not halacha. It's called Eitz HaTayva because Pirkei Avos is not halacha. It's Midas Pasidus. It's Eitz HaTayva. Kimavur Barambam. Therefore, yes, it is advisable to have a rabbi for Piskei Halacha. But the first Aseilech HaRav, yeah, actually, the Rambam describes that the shot in the Mishnah is afilo ein roi ulias rav. You take someone to have a dialectic relation with, someone that you can talk to in learning and grow together as a chavrusa, and that is the shot in Aseilech HaRav. Someone to grow with in learning, to have a constant, ongoing discussion, critique, someone to set you straight, to formulate your ideas, to check your ideas. Basically, it means to have someone audit you by having a great relationship. It's best to have someone which is much more qualified, but the Rambam says even someone which isn't. The bare fact that there's a relationship of two people and you formulate your ideas and there's checks and balances, this is Tamskayim Tamudai B'yadai, that's the Kiyum Din. The Eitz HaTayv of Aseilech HaRav, we brought down in that Mishnah according to the Rambam Pirsha Mishnah. So the usage of the word Aseilech HaRav here, I don't think, at least according to Rambam, is not what we're talking about. We're talking about having a mentor, which I don't find in that Lashon, Aseilech HaRav, at least according to Rambam, that's not there. Is it advisable to have a mentor?
Well, is it advisable to go to a good doctor? Is it advisable to get a good lawyer? Is it advisable to get advice? Yes, if you're smart. If you don't know cardiology, I suggest you go to a very big cardiologist if you have an issue. Does it mean, is there a religious imperative to do that? Maybe if there's a mitzvah not to be a fool. So it means to say, yes, find the best you can to service what you need. And here the question is, what are you looking for? And that means say what type of Rebbe you will look for. Well, first and foremost, before you choose a Rebbe, you have to know one thing. Obviously, we're not talking about a professor of Talmud at the moment, because then it's obvious you have to be able to have someone who will teach you something. The getter of a Rebbe Muvak in Halacha is brought down under Ramah in the name of the Marik. It's not the person which will teach you Pilpulim and Chilukim, but the person which will teach you Darkei Ha'iyun in order to learn a sugya to get the Pitzkei Halacha. The Ramah brings this down Ladina. That's called the Rav Muvak, a person which will teach you how to think. A person which will teach you Svara Yeshora, how to crack a Taishas, how to understand it, how to see the halachic truth coming out of a complex sugya. That the din of Rabbi Muvik, which is there, Ladina, at least how the Ramah passes that Marik, I think it's simplified. We're not talking about that. I don't think that's the issue of this evening. The issue is a mentor. Who will help you become what you can be? I think the first thing you need to look for is someone that's genuine. That's the first thing. Someone that's genuine. Someone that was just described. We described some of our own teachers, or Moshe described so eloquently, Reb Aaron. I must say, I was his neighbor for 10 years. So I wasn't a Talmud, I was a neighbor. And I saw so much of that just in shul. I got to tell you a story. You know what? I'm going to tell you a story. That was a man. He was a... I hope you don't mind. I am going to tell a story about him. He once came to Karen Biavna, and he gave a guest shiur that I still remember. It was about the immorality of Achashverus, of taxing the world for his festivities. It was a very beautiful shiur. Well, we were neighbors, so he said, listen, come on, take you home. That was a time, I don't want to go into particulars because I'm afraid of certain sifnei shulchan aruch, of what to say, what not to say. And since I didn't do chazorah on them, I'm going to be a little careful here. There was a certain forum in New York under the auspices of Yeshiva University at the time. And there was a certain guest speaker there which was going to speak. And Reb Aaron was also going to be there. I'll never forget this. And we're driving in the car and I'm saying, listen, you know, you realize that X is going to say things which, believe me, you came out chayiv kriya. And you got to do something about it. He stops the car and looks at me. What do you think I am? No one's going to listen to me. What do you want? They talk to a wall. What do you want from me? Why would they listen to me? I was flabbergasted. Are you kidding? I said, listen, I'm going to tell you right now. And I was a bit chutzpahdik because I was a little older than him. So I'm still an age where I can be a little more chutzpahdik. I said, listen, you know, you may be right. You actually may be nothing. But they think you're something. Oh, that's a point. He actually agreed to me. That's what I'm trying to say. This floored me. So you're talking about a genuine person? Yeah, you may be right. I thought you'd say, you chutzpah, yeah. You can't, no, you're right. What? I'm nobody. But they may think I'm somebody. So he actually got up and said something there in a very strong way. I still remember the Jewish report didn't like it, so they put it in the third page. You know exactly what I'm talking about. Okay? He said you have to write Kriya. Okay, I'm going to take that little thing, my credit, that one. that was me pushing. But the truth of the matter is, yeah, that's a genuine person. It's an example of a genuine person that lived values. That's A. He's got to be an Ish Emes. And it's very hard to find Anshei Emes. But at least find a person which is trying to be an Ish Emes.
You're not going to find any more people like that. I don't know. I don't know them. But try to find people who want to be, wish to be, will to be, aspire to be, are breaking their backs to be. But there's another side of emes. You have to find people which will tell you your truth. They won't butter you up. They will tell you the truth about yourself. Because we all look for people which will hug us and feather bed our reality. And in all truth, we lie. And we live projected images afterwards. We think that we are God's gift to humanity. And someone's got to tell you you're good raw material. Someone has to tell you the truth. Because you'll never learn until you realize the darkness of question and doubt. Once you realize that it's so dark out there, then you will be dying to know truths. Someone has to tell you that it's dark. Someone has to tell you that you taki don't understand anything. Someone has to tell you exactly the way it is. Malach makia al ka'ola v'imleg dal is not just on grass. You need a malach which will hit you on the head and say, listen, you can do so much more, but you're not there yet. You need someone that cares enough and is willing to do that. And here I'll tell you a story. Maisish, are you with me? As I said before, Rav Hutner was no easy guy to hang around with. He was demand. I don't want to go into the Protea story because it'll take me an hour. Let's just say one day he was angry at me. He called me into his house and blasted me so much and loud that people downstairs, two stories, came out and said, what's happening? I'm telling you, teichacha, teichacha. His son-in-law walks in and sees me white as a sheet. I walk, I says, I am leaving him. There ain't no way I'm staying here. He says, Mendel, you're not leaving anything. You're staying. No, I am leaving. He didn't let me leave for 2 hours. He said, stay. Don't worry about it. 4 years later, he walks into the base medrash, says, come, I want to talk to you. And then he starts giving me an hour and a half speech on Rav and Talmud. And he told me, remember, and he described the chinuch of the Alter of Slobodkin, how he wasn't easy with people. And he looked at me and he said, until you have talmidim, that you will not let them go, and you will scream at them that the whole neighborhood will hear. And they will not run away, but they will come back and stay with you, then you have nothing yet. And Tom is the person that realizes his life is tied to this person because he screamed at him because he was genuine. He wants you to grow. The pain of seeing you in a bad place hurts him. That's a genuine person. And then he looks at me and twinkles in his eye and says, Ms. Stumby, you know why I'm telling this to you. So I says, but why so long? Because I waited until I think you could hear this. He waited to tell me this when he thought I could really hear it. For me, that I said before, that's a genuine person. So the first thing I think you look at if you want a Rebbe is he's got to be genuine. He's got to be mevakeshes ha'emes. He's got to kick you in the pants that you should be a mevakeshes ha'emes. And he should let you go. He won't sleep nights, but he will hit you on the head if it need be. Just because he loves you and he wants you to grow. Find a person that loves you. Find a person which is genuine and will be genuine with you. That's Aleph Sheba, Aleph Sheba, Aleph, what defining the Rebbe. That is another thing you need. Lechem lefi ataf. Not every person. I believe that many of my friends would not have survived with Rav Hutner. I'm telling you, when I say not have survived, you know, they were rough. I mean, when you had to walk out of his office, you had to walk, you never showed him his back, your back. You walked backwards. You never went in that office without a hat and jacket. You never sat until he, like, told you, you know, and if he felt like not letting you sit, he would not let you sit because you annoyed him. You would stand there and he would talk for an hour. He was really trying to educate. He didn't have time. He wanted to do what his Rebbe did. I'll tell you a story about the man to explain what kind of mechanich is, because that's what you should be looking for. People like that. Mechanichim, not informers, not giving you notebooks, but carving your hearts and your minds, teaching you how to think, teaching you sensitivities, teaching you values, making you people out of raw material. By the way, raw material, as we know, is called a golem. Golem Ekelim. A real Rebbe is like the Maral took clay and made a golem. A real Rebbe takes a golem and makes a human being out of it. That's what you're looking for. So I must tell you, he told me, remember a story, he came to Slabodka, he was very young, he was 14 and a half, and he meets the Alter of Slabodka, which was then the head rabbi of the yeshiva. He says, Yingel, where are you from? I'm from Warsaw. No, do you have a chavrusa? So he says, no, not yet. He's met after 2 days, says, no, Yingel, do you have a chavrusa? Baruch Hashem, I found one. She says, who is it? My Yitzhahara. So he says, no, Yingel, why not the Yitzhahara type? Nay, my Yitzhahara is much sharper. The Alter felt this was chutzpah. Sharp kid. He loved sharp kids. But he was like, well. So comes Rosh Hashanah. He's sitting as a young boy in the back benches. And the Alter sends one of the big Talmidim, the Divrei Yecheskel, Rebbe Yecheskel Bernstein, the big, big Talmud Slabodka. He sends him, ask that little boy his mother's name. And the Alter, this is the one him, davened for his Talmidim. Davened. I know of a certain Gaber Rabba, which was in a certain institution in America. Without going into it, I heard from Chatzkel Sarner that the Alter fasted on him 60 Taneses. A big Mechaber of a Sefer on Tosefta. He used to fast for his students. Taneses, Tfilas. Like a father, like a mother. What can I tell you? So he asked, Zogdei Yingelish, I want to know his mother's name. So the Yingele, he came to Rav Yitzchak, he was Yitzchak at the time, and he said, the Alter wants to know your mother's name. So he says, why? I'll go tell him. No, 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 don't go. Just tell me your mother's name. No. A gutsy kid, if you understand, if you met him, he had an enormous twinkle in his eye. He was a shagetz. He was a real, inside there was a wild creative void there, till the end. His sense of humor was crazy. So he goes up towards the Mizrach and the Alter sees him. And he's surrounded by Doyle Slabotkim, out mitten yom and eroi, murder kol amah, this is the guild. And the Alter screams to him, nisht in mein dalet amas. Not in my dalet, berab him. Nisht in mein dalet amas. You're a late, a late. Covered a tire, not in my dalet, you're a menudah. He looks at me and says, no, what did I do? You think I ran away? No, I said, what did you do? I screamed for far, Ben Chana. And then I went back. She said, you think I ran away from Slabodka? Because of that, I stayed. Because he was genuine. He was real. And he cared. And he wanted to daven. But he would not let me go. That's a rebbe. So yes, how to choose a rebbe, I think that's the criteria. But do you think everybody could handle the Sabra Slabod? Are you kidding? You need someone which fits for you. And everybody's going to have to find someone which fits for him. But let there be one major criteria. A genuine person who genuinely cares, which is an ish emes, and won't let you go. That should be it, right? I have to let you go for the second question you did. Thank you.
So we only have a few minutes left, and then we're going to also have a chance to hear from Rav Sheffer for a few moments in closing. So let's just go to the very last question, maybe just if we can.
I know it's not fair in 5-6 minutes, but maybe we'll ask Rabbi Blachman to start with this final question. And the final question is, under what circumstances should one disagree with one's Rebbe? When is one permitted to disagree with his Rebbe? And I guess it's probably not enough time. I don't just think there's enough time to talk about a Rebbe who has gone wrong. We'll leave that off the side.
I never had one.
Let's just decide about, let's just talk for just briefly. If we can keep it to 5 minutes. If we can keep it to 5 minutes, under what circumstances is it appropriate for one to disagree with one's Rebbe? What level of independence should a person have from his Rebbe?
Okay, this
what extent should you disagree with your Rebbe? Or can you? Excuse me. I'll tell you a story. I taught in Kiryat Yavne. It was my third year, and I had a student. Actually, he's a Rav today in Yerushalayim. His name is Rabbi Mann. He wrote quite a few svarim. No? Danny Mann?
Mishpacha.
Mishpacha. Very good. So, Danny Mann? So I remember I gave bechinos in those days in Kiryat Yavne. I used to give written bechinos. And so I gave bechinos on Shir. Now, that isn't easy. Those who have been there will know. This is that's terrible. Actually, I stopped doing it because Sar Baruch Haim is derisive. even from, then I started doing oral, then I'd stop doing oral because Al Bonus Mechaveh Barabim is also usher. So I just talk and learn it. But in principle, so I gave this machina, and they all, regurgitated. You said this, you said that. It was very sweet. His machina was the best machina in the class. He would say, you said this, but I think so-and-so. Now, I want to tell you the honest truth. At that age, what was he, 18? I think, fairly. When he said, Anir Lanius Daiti, it wasn't a Sheker, it wasn't a Nova. It was Anius Daiti. At the time, he was a young boy. But you know what? He got the 100 mark. Because a real teacher is not supposed to be teaching you information. He's not carrying something that you're supposed to accept blindly. A real teacher will teach you thought, sensitivity, and God help you, independence of thought. So the true teacher is the one which will encourage your challenge. He may show you how you're wrong, which is legitimate, because he probably knows a bit more than you at the time. But remember, you're not going to be with him forever. And a true shir or a true teacher, at least the way I see things, I think we're going to share this one, is not he who will give you information, but he who will carve your mind and your heart will, I would say, take away the elephant skin that covers your brain, pierces it, allows you to finally be an independent thinker. So can you disagree with your Rebbe? I think he's hoping that you will. But he's hoping that you will only do it with intellectual honesty, with anava in front of the Mesira. I also will disagree with the Ksais, but I'm scared of it. Remember who they are, remember who you are. There's a beautiful letter of the Chazon Ish that he wrote to Blaise Pachinski. They had this dialogue of Pirtzis Esther and Yevamos, and Reb Lazer points out that, listen, what you're saying doesn't fit with the Ritva. And obviously, the Chazon Ish may have not had a Ritva. So the Chazon Ish answers, look, I know that there's a Ritva, but if I would have to be tied down to just that way of thinking, hayachoserli esek atoira, let me think on my own, and then I will. Fold back because of the Ritva. But first, let me think. It's an unbelievable letter to the Chazon Ish. Yes, we have to say it. The Ritva, I'm not going to fight him. That's like history. But you must think. You must, in order to appreciate the Ritva, you have to be able to even disagree and then finally understand where he's coming from, if you can. And if not, just bow down. Yeah, I will argue with Reb Chaim. See, I'm the sheet of Reb Moshe. Okay?
That basically, Levi's talk is awkward. That one with me, between you and me. Okay? But let that one go. But I'm sure Reb Chaim would want me to argue with him. Because believe me, if you look at the Derech HaLimud of Reb Chaim, it has nothing to do with the Derech HaLimud of the Beis HaLevi. They're not even close. If that's good, the Brisker Derech went so many different places. Reb Chaim argued with his father. And his father trained him to do that, to become an independent thinker. There's so many different Talmidim of Reb Chaim. You see how they took him in different places. It's unbelievable. To connect the Shurim of the Rav to Reb Ochber, they don't speak the same language. They don't deal with the same topics. They are different expressions. Kipati shifote sela. We expect you to be different. As long as you have a different face and different personality, you're going to have a different understanding. Your Rebbe is there to form, to open that mind, to form clear thought, analytical thought. When it comes to Ashkafa, it's the same thing. Yes, we respect. We stand in enormous humility in front of the past. We know who we're talking about. When you stand in front of the Rambam, in front of the Ran, in front of the Ramban, you know, Shalom Alechem Al Raglecha. Who are you talking about? Kol Atayra Kula. And for real, in Rishonim Kimalachim Anu Kibnei Adam, we can say this under Rishonim. If they have Nei Adam, we're not even intelligent Chamayrim. We're just stupid donkeys compared to these people. Does that mean we don't think about, analyze, disagree? I mean, you should. The Rajba wants you to fight with him. And then he expects you probably, if you're wise enough and not stupid, you'll say, okay, I don't understand him, but I'm going to accept him. He doesn't expect you to go down without a fight. So that's thought. When it comes to Divrei Agada, what do I have more than the Rav himself that walked away from the traditions of his grandfather? Christian's grandfather and his political ideas, etc., his relationship to Zionism, is totally opposite of what the Rav thought and said. I'm sure Reb Chaim would want the Rav to do what he did. He may not have enjoyed his maskanas, but he would love the independence. So yes, the true Rebbe wants you to be independent, critical, but humble and honest. Don't challenge, ask. When you get to the stage that you also know Kola Tera Kula, then still humility will not allow you to challenge. You will still ask, because you know what you know is nothing compared to that. So those are the answers to your question.
Just tell a quick story.
Like, go ahead.
I think we have five more minutes.
Okay. Five minutes. Less than that. Everything Reb Lachman said, I just want to capture a very, very cute story about the Rebbeim wanting you to have that independence, but wanting that independence to be intellectually honest and couch within the Masara, and that when you challenge a Tosfos b'chol levavcha b'chol nashcha and you scream at a Tosfos, you're showing Tosfos the greatest respect, because his is Tara ben Hashemayim, and you want to make sure you understand it. You can only understand it if you challenge it. So in ninth, about 13 years ago, it was Rav Aaron Lichtenstein's 70th birthday. And all the Talmidim of the Yeshiva, of the Gush, and all the alumni gathered in Yerushalayim on Erev Shabbos to celebrate his birthday. And there were speakers and speakers and speakers, and you know how it goes. Each one is allotted 20 minutes, but it starts, I'm sure, like tonight. And all of a sudden, it's 3:30 in the afternoon, and the keynote speaker, Rav Amital, hasn't spoken yet. So one day, we'll talk about Rav Amital, but one of his kochos was he could say one sentence and bring down the house, because he didn't have any time to speak, which always happened, because he was always the last. And he said, I'll tell you the difference between Rav Aaron and other Rabbanim. All the Rabbanim rotsim chasidim. Rav Lichtenstein rotsa talmidim. Most Rabbanim are looking for chasidim. Rav Aaron's looking for a talmid. Ma avdel ben chasidim l'talmidim. Chasidim makshivim l'chol davar she'rav omer. Chasidim listen to everything the Rebbe tells them. Talmidim makshivim l'shum davar. He said that. The point is not that you disobey,
But he always told us, "Ani lo rotze amital in tanim." I don't want you to be miniature mock versions of me. No one that we've spoken about tonight ever became the gedolim that we've spoken about by imitating in a false silhouette and a hollow simulation of anyone else. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created you with your kochos, humility, intellectual honesty, care about Torah, be inspired by the Rabbanim, but the only way that you could become a B'kiv Eger, who didn't have a B'kiv Eger, is by having what Rav Bachman described before. So, Tamidim Makshivim Lashon Davar.
Excellent.
Okay, a big thank you and a round of applause for closing, as the last words for this summer, that we're going to be so good to hear from another of my rabbeim, as I said, a little bit uncomfortable for me, talking about Aseil Harav in front of my rabbeim, but also I had this list for so many years to learn by Rabbi Shefter. Those words that Rabbi Tarragon said, I remember when I was very young. I was really young. I was in the ninth grade, and I would sometimes at that time I went to MTA for high school. At that time, MTA did not have a morning minyan, and so I used to daven sometimes before. And my ride into yeshiva, sometimes we didn't have I had to daven with the college minyan. The college had a minyan in the morgue dorm on the ground floor. So I used to go. There was an 8 o'clock minyan. We used to come in early. Yeshiva didn't start till 9. And I remember as a ninth grader, they used to wheel in this old man just for Kriyas HaTorah. And I was like 13 years old. I had no idea who this person even was. And they would wheel in this old man. Everybody would I was a young kid. I just have this memory of, he wouldn't even be there for the whole davening at that time. This was, 1981, 82. And I only realized probably a few years later, maybe 3-4 years later, that this was Rav Soloveitchik, Zecher Tzadik Levracha. And myself, in a small way, as Rabbi Tarragon said, I consider Rav Soloveitchik so much of one of my rabbeim because of how much Torah I learned from his Talmidim. And I never really heard Torah live. I did hear some tapes. I heard some recordings. I heard many, many pieces of Torah. And so much of what I got from my Rabbi Shechter is also from Rav Soloveitchik. So as a beautiful way to conclude both all the Torah that we learned from Rav Shechter this summer and an evening dedicated to understanding the impact of a Rebbe, we're going to have this discuss now for a few minutes to hear from Rabbi Shechter a little bit about his Rebbe, Rav Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik, Rav Shechter.
Who has Yerushalayim? But sometimes we can see a person who's lacking Yerushalayim. If he's lacking Yerushalayim, you shouldn't pick him as a Rebbe. We started before talking about Rabbeinu. I thought you were going to talk about his relationship with Elisha ben Avuya. Gemara says you don't follow his opinion. You follow the opinion of the Chachamim. That if a Rav done of a Malach Hashem Tzvot is actually Torah Midin, he really has to seem to be angelic. If he doesn't seem to be angelic, doesn't seem to be a Malach, doesn't seem to have Yirah Shamayim, that's possible to learn by such a Rebbe. The Gemara has another comment. The Gemara at the end of the first Perek in Ehrman says, why is it that we usually pass them like Beisilov against Beishana most of the time? The Gemara gives one reason, because they were the Rabbim, the Rabbim Hattas. The Gemara has another explanation, because they were more humble than the Beishana. It doesn't mean Beishana were arrogant, but the Beisilov were more humble. So what does humility have to do with Psak Halacha? When you graduate college, they should give you the humility award. Why is the reward that we pass them like that? So the Gemara seems to be implying that the person who is more humble stands a better chance of having that Tziyat HaShemayim, to be Mechaben HaHoemes. The person who's less humble will always think, whatever my Moskva Rishon was, that's the correct shot. I'll never judge himself, maybe I made a mistake. So you have to try to pick a Rebbe who's honest. Try to pick a Rebbe who seems to be a Talmid Chacham. He has to seem to be a person who has a lot of Yirah Shamayim. He has to seem to be angelic. And he has to be a person who's humble. In recent years, the last few years, there were several scandals about different rabbinic personalities here in Eretz Yisrael. And in America, outside of Shom Shabam, all of these people were extremely, extremely arrogant from day number one. And I always felt that this is mamish an accident that's just waiting to happen. People who are arrogant, who are teaching Torah, it's going to have to be reversed. If the person doesn't have humility, so he didn't get the first base, there's nothing to do. He can't be Mechaben HaHoemes. You have to try to pick. I say, El Harab, you have to try to pick. I want to thank the whole Chevra. This is really an achsanah shel Torah. I enjoyed running it the last few weeks. And I want to thank all of my chavrusas. I have quite a few chavrusas. Just yesterday and today, we were learning lines in the Rambam. And the Rambam was talking about people who are b'nei ha-Nevi'im. They're preparing to become Nevi'im. They can't invoke the Nevuah just like this. Moshe Rabbeinu could say, he wants to speak to the Ribbono Shel Olam and get the Nevuah right. But the other Nevi'im, prepare, prepare, prepare. Ever get to the Nevuah. So the Rambam writes that B'nai Hanavim means Talmid Hanavim would prepare it to acquire Ruach HaKadosh. And then sometimes the Pasuk uses the expression that he would be Nepach Li'ish Acher. Sometimes a person feels in himself that something is a major change over here. And sometimes the major change is he gets Ruach HaKadosh. And sometimes the major change is that the person is learning in a base medrash, and he begins to see what learning Torah is all about. A lot of the students are learning in America. So you learn in the morning, then the afternoon you go to high school. You don't really see learning a whole day long until after high school is over. Then you come to learn in Eretz Yisrael 1 or 2 or 3 years. But the Talmid Chacham here in Eretz Yisrael, then you get to begin to see what learning is all about. One is exposed to it by Semedish, and everybody's learning. So a lot of times a person is Nepach Li'ish Acher, becomes a different type of a person. This often occurs in the summertime, in this program. A lot of the boys that participate become Nepach Li'ish Acher because of this program. Others have to wait till later, after they finish high school, and they come to learn in Eretz Yisrael. There was an interesting discussion about disagreeing with the Rebbe. Every discipline has its own self-contained logic. When you're talking about chemistry, you don't talk about sines and cosines and integrals. You talk about physics, you have to use building blocks of physics. You talk about mathematics, you have to do the building blocks of mathematics. When you're talking and learning, you can't necessarily apply common sense. Common sense doesn't necessarily apply in physics or chemistry. I have a chemical over here, it's nice and calm. And I have a chemical over here, nice and calm, not making any trouble. If I mix them together, it's going to make an explosion. So they ask a kasha, how can it be? This is a calm chemical, this is a calm chemical. Pure chemistry is not a kasha. Common sense doesn't always work in chemistry. Often does not work. Common sense doesn't always work in medicine and biology. Biology has its own rules and regulations. The Gemara says that Hilchos Treifus has to do with biology. You can't ask a kasha, you don't even betray this who don't know. So how can it be that this is a treifa? If you cut the leg over here, it's a treifa. Cut the leg higher, it's not a treifa. It should be a cup of fiber. It should certainly be a treifa. The Gemara says you can't ask any kashas. We're talking about biology. Every discipline has its own self-contained logic. And halacha, Torah also has its own self-contained logic. Common sense doesn't always work. Often it does not work. A lot of times it does work. A lot of times it does apply, but it doesn't always apply. So in halacha, that's correct. A person who learns is entitled to an opinion. But how can you formulate an opinion before you study all the demands? You don't begin to know what Talmudic logic is. It's said in the name of Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik. I don't know if it's true. That's how they put in his name. But he told his children they shouldn't begin to say a svara and learning until they've covered all of Shas with Rashi. They have to know what's the style of Talmudic logic. A lot of times the Gemara will borrow a concept from a different area in Halacha. The Gemara will quote something from Hilchos Tevuos to prove this point in Sukkah. One place to the other, because you're trying to ascertain what is Talmudic logic that's acceptable and what is not acceptable. Yeah, the Talmudim are entitled to disagree with the Rebbe, but a lot of times the Rebbe knows so many more Gemaras. So what am I disagreeing with the Rebbe? It's good. But the Talmud says, surely like this. And I think that you can say other way. Okay, you should write it down in another couple of years after he runs through the rest of Shas. You should judge to see whether his idea is correct or not. So Soloveitchik pointed out in several of his more than one of his published essays that both Rav Chaim Volozhin and the Baal HaTanya, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, have the same point, that one of the Ikari HaMuna that the Rambam points out, Shezos HaTorolos HaMochlefes, the laws of the Torah never change. The world keeps on changing. So a lot of times the Shailah is a different Shailah. So the Pesach is going to be different. But the laws of the Torah never change. Situations may change. In our generation, that's the basic difference between the Orthodox and the other extremes, the non-Orthodox, whether Zos HaTorolos HaMochlefes or not. So why such an obstinate insistence, Zos HaTorolos HaMochlefes? Rav Soloveitchik wrote that we see both the Baal HaTanya and the Chaim Volozhin, they both give the same explanation. But we assume that the Torah is not merely a collection of dinim, 248 mitzvot asay, 365 mitzvot asay. The Torah, if you put everything all together, is a description of Elokus, a description of the essence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Novi says in the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ani Hashem Lo Shanisi. God's essence doesn't change. Everything in the Bria keeps on changing. Everything that God created in the world, the human body changes, the grass changes, the fruits, the vegetables, everything, chemistry. Everything keeps on changing, but the Rebbe Shalom is Lamayla Menatev. He has nothing to do with the Bria. His essence doesn't change. So, because the Torah is a description of the essence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so the laws of the Torah never change. Rav Soloveitchik used to have big chutzpah and gaiva when he was trying to figure out the Gemara. The Rebbe Shalom gave us the Torah and he told us we have to figure out what it says there. So, we have to use our brain to the best of our ability to ask kashas and try to figure out the correct shot. The story is told, there's a Sefer Kutam Shulash that has the biographies of the three generations, Rabbi Kiveger and his son Avoda Hassam Sefer, and his son Itzav Sefer. And the Sefer is written, it's a biography, the Sefer is written by one of the children of Itzav Sefer. So these are the official family version of the stories. The story is told when the Hassam Sefer was a bar mitzvah boy. His father was a religious balabas, but he wasn't that learned. So the father did not prepare a tractor for his family, so he prepared his own shtigl Torah. So as a young boy, just 13, he said a shtigl Torah. He quoted from one of his ancestors, the Sefer on Sefer Nezik, and I think Kois Yeshuas, I forgot which one, one of the Svarim on Nezik, because he quoted something. And then he said he thinks that it's not correct, and he explained, he proved why he was wrong. So his father was so upset. The father didn't know who's right, whether his little son or the elders later. So the father slapped him in public and he said, little baby, Tisha, what did this agree with the great grandfather? What do you know? You don't know what you're talking about. So his Rebbe was there, Rav Nosson Adler. So he said to the father, why did you slap the kid? He's right. And your great grandfather is not right. Rav Nosson Adler convinced the child, some sefer, very strange, parsha, Jewish history, he convinced him to leave his father's home and to live by him, not because he wanted him to marry his daughter. He didn't. He had a daughter. He didn't marry his daughter. Marry someone else. Not because he wanted to marry his daughter. He said, if you're going to leave by your father, every time you're going to ask a kasha and the Gemara, ask a kasha and the Rambam, ask a kasha and the Shulchan, father's going to slap you. What right do you have to ask a kasha and the Kairos? That's the only way to learn. You have to have chutzpah. So that's all that. You've always had chutzpah and gaiva. We can tackle this. We can figure this out. The Rav Shlomo gave us the Torah, he gave us brains, and he told us not to use our brains to figure out what it is. But then Rav Soloveitchik used to say, as it's in published essays, once you have the insight, once you figure out what's going on, it means that you're now in the presence of the Rav Shlomo. The Torah is not just a collection of the it's a description of Elokus. So once you figure out the true pshat, you are more in the presence of the Rav Shlomo than you were before. Person of the Rabbi Shalom. A person has to melt into insignificance. So Nature goes used to be with chutzpah and gaiva when he was trying to figure out what's going on. And then when he figured it out, he would step back and go back into a state of humility. A lot of things to learn from Nature, but that's one of them. When we try to learn, we should have the chutzpah and the gaiva. Sometimes gaiva is in place. You have to have a gaiva in kedusha to have the feeling that you can master this. You can figure out what's going on over here. We should try to excel and try to figure out all the halachas. And then when we do discover some new insight, we do discover the true pshat, then we have to step back a little bit. Realize we're more in the presence of the Rebbe Shlomo than we were before. We have to have a greater degree of humility. I want to wish you all continued hatzlacha this summer and next year. You should all become that pachim leishacher in the proper direction. Thank you again for your chavrus.
A couple stories were repetitive, but there's a couple of shit.
You actually might go back to the other one.